What's up, sports fans? Welcome to another episode of Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm one of your hosts, King Cash, joined, as always, by my good friend, co-host, the one, the great, the story man himself, JVC.
Also, co-owner now, I guess official co-owner of the fan-controlled football beasts team.
Oh, you got in.
I think I got in. They finally expanded that. They took my $150. Yeah, that's maybe the dumbest thing that I've spent money on aside from NBA Top Shot. The Beasts they're out of the playoffs. Actually, playoffs are over. The new champion for the first ever FCF champion is the Wild Aces. So they won that game on a quarterback draw on the final play as the clock was running out. So congratulations to them. I think, like, from all the games that I've watched, there's been a lot of games being decided on the with like winning scoring plays on the very last play of the game.
Yeah,
so it's, and a lot of them have been quarterback draws. I think there's just something about the way the rules are arranged that just allows for that, and allows for all these games to be just really, really close for some reason. So I think there might be a little bit of tweaking to some of that. I mean, obviously, like, close games and dramatic finishes are good, overall, I've had quite a bit of fun with this league, but there's a couple things that could use some work.
Yeah.
And so we've got a Sportico article in the show notes that kind of covers what's going to happen next. This has been pretty successful, and you know, by week five, they were up to 2.1 million views on Twitch. That can kind of mean different things to different people. I don't know how much of that was, you know, concurrent viewership. They got quite a bit of engagement, and they started small. They only started with four teams, and I think they're going to expand that to more teams as well. So I would say that out of all the amateur startup, or not amateur, but all of the professional startup football leagues that we've seen, this is the first one to actually, or at least the ones that we've seen the last couple of years, this is the first one to actually finish a full season.
Yeah.
So that's,
I mean,
that's
the XFL kind of got hammered by a lot of different things and all that kind of stuff. And speaking of the XFL and what's going on there, we have this story about the XFL doing a possible merger/partnership with the CFL. As we talked about a couple of weeks ago, or kind of coming into this year, the big thing with the XFL was they got shut down, as did all other sports, by COVID. Kind of started to have a lot of in drama about a lot of different things, and ended up shutting down. And that was their second go around, coming into the like realm of putting themselves back on the forefront of sports. Now, where we are with the XFL is they are owned by a consortium led by The Rock, who has been making a lot of big waves, mostly in media, about what they're going to be doing with the XFL to bring it back. We had some stories about their structure coming into this, but now we're at this point where there's a possible merger between the XFL and the CFL. And I'm not sure how I feel about this, right? Because on one hand, I see it as this is possibly something to take an established league that has been around for a few years in the CFL. And
more than a few years, actually. Like,
yeah.
Over a century, actually.
I should say a few decades. And merge it with something that needs a big brand change, but can have a big brand around it, right? So you take the media hype of the XFL and you merge it with the CFL and create a new product that can actually continue forward, right? Because I think one of the things we talked about, especially with the XFL, is the bad press kind of attached to the name, right? The sense of non-longevity attached to the name of the XFL, and having to get away with that or get away from that. And this could possibly be the way to do that.
Now, I think when this first story broke, I think everybody jumped straight to merger. And I'm a little bit less reluctant to do that, because initially when I saw this story about the story is that they're talking with each other. That's it. And the only concrete thing to come out of that is the XFL has chosen to delay the start of, or at least delay any further announcements about the start of its season, which they planned in spring 2022, which is next year. Delay any further announcements about that until they're done talking with the CFL. So that doesn't necessarily mean merger. No. To me, that meant the two, or maybe the biggest names in sub NFL professional football working out some sort of arrangement so that they could share players. So that maybe a player could play in both leagues, and then have time to play in the NFL season, or working out some sort of deal where their seasons don't overlap with each other so that they can, both share players and also don't cannibalize each other's TV time. There's a bunch of other things that they can talk about as well, that they can share without actually having to share leagues, because there are a ton of logistical issues as well. If they do try to merge, and if they do try to put some American teams in the XFL, or sorry, in the CFL, there's some economic rules and laws that that go around that. The CFL actually has rules against, I think at least half the players on CFL teams have to be Canadian. So there's that whole wrinkle to this, and whether they even want to change any of that. On top of that, the vastly different rule sets, or not vastly different, but slightly different rule sets between the two leagues.
I'm going to throw, this is going to be my last thing, right? I'm going to throw a thought piece out into the ether. And either one of you can answer this if you want to step in, DJ Emrant. What about, right, in the vast world, the vast universe of doing something akin to like a shared season, right, where you have almost exhibition style games that kind of count for some kind of points or something like that between the two, but don't necessarily hamper or damper either league. But then at the end, like after your playoffs, you maybe have like your champions play against each other for like some kind of cash prize or something like that, right? Like the best of the CFL versus the best of the XFL, and like maybe a short playthrough just to garner more attention for both of you, and kind of share in this profit of in I know your thing is always kind of be a partner to the NFL, but almost more of a share of take more from Big Brother, take more from the NFL, right? Take more attention for both by taking more attention from the one kind of thing.
Yeah. I think they're going to end up with something like that. I don't think they're going to go as far as to do any merger, but
well, yeah, no, that's on that idea is on the idea of not a merger, but a partnership,
yeah,
with the intent of taking more air out of the NFL balloon.
Yeah, and I think the problem with that is like unless they're both playing at the same time, then it's kind of hard to do the champion of one plays the champion of the other. It's like, you kind of have to.
Kaz, your idea is very old school. Like, this is how the old AFL and NFL were.
That's how we
got
the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And I dig it. I do dig it. Yeah. I like the idea of the XFL and the CFL maybe having a joint competition committee and maybe moving the rules from each league a little closer together. So maybe
or maybe play that, two games on two different sets of rules. And
well, now we're just kind of we're going like
I think, but see, at the end, I think you do something like that, right? I think you go old school because you have these weird, and you've seen them, you know them. You have these weird NFL heads that are like, man, if it was like back in this time, and you're like fucking before color, like no, nobody wants to see that anymore. But you give them that little salty taste of nostalgia, but keep it really modern, right? And you do a joint game where like the only people who know the rules are the two weirdos who had to merge the rules, right? Like and you do it and you have fun, right? And you be a little bit more showboaty. You go WCW Nitro on them, right? You do more showboaty shit while pointing a finger at them. Not to that extent, right? You don't straight out call out the NFL, but you're like, yo, we're having fun over here. Look at us. Like, look at it. We're having so much fun that we can have fun with other leagues.
I still like the like you do the invasion angle and it's like you plan it out a little bit
better. Okay.
It's like you take like the top three.
All right. That's enough. We're closing the forbidden door with football. There is no forbidden door with football, okay? We're done.
Oh,
there.
Yes, there is.
No, there isn't. We're moving on.
You can get an entire event out of this.
Guys,
yeah, like the top three from
the
each
next
league, and then
guys. The next story in the doc is exactly why the NFL will never be bothered by any of this.
Right. All right. It's not because it's, you know, they just signed a deal for $110 billion for the next 11 years. There's no competing with that kind of money. There's no competing for other sports leagues with that kind of money either. But the thing is, that's kind of the appetite for football. So we've seen that off-season football can pull numbers that rival NBA numbers and baseball numbers. And so there's still a big piece of that pie, even if that pie is not going to compete with the main event pie. So,
this is why I think things like this have to happen, right? This is why I think these smaller leagues need to talk to each other, right? Because I think you don't compete for the stakes in the ground that someone else already has, right? You compete for this new stakes that people are putting down. Twitch, YouTube, Netflix, Hulu, which I mean is kind of an old stake in its design. These places are becoming more readily available and they're constantly looking for content, right? Those places are constantly looking for things they can put in front of people. And a lot of them want to get more into live content things, right? Twitch definitely wants other types of live content, even though they used to have it when they were called Justin TV, but I'm not going to get into that. That is outside of just the gaming market, right? YouTube wants other things that aren't just produced video. They want live content. So you start going to those people, and yes, it's not going to be $10 billion right now, right? It'll be a couple of million dollars, maybe a couple of $100 million, maybe, but you start to go to the other avenues of revenue because the NFL owns the TV market, and that's fine, right? The same thing with the NBA. The NBA owns the TV market. And I think if a smaller league of basketball was to come along, I don't think they should compete for the TV market. I think they should compete in the live streaming market. It's more open. It's more free to compete for. And all around, you could possibly get more options.
Kaz, I really could not disagree with you more on that. Like, I'm so over the idea of put everything on Twitch. We can all go on Twitch. It's all on Twitch. We can live stream everything.
I'm not saying it has to be Twitch.
I'm just saying like the live streaming idea for major sports. Like it's not clicking. Like it's not connecting the way it would. If it were connecting the way that it was, the NFL wouldn't have just cut the deal that it did.
I mean, it did. Part of that deal is Amazon gets exclusive Thursday night football rights. So,
ooh, Thursday night football. Whoop-de-damn-doo.
I mean, we are talking, you know, the still a shit ton of viewers. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, I know we don't necessarily love the idea of Thursday night football, but it's still pulling more viewers than any other sport. So it's not anything to you know, thumb your nose at, but it's like the lines are blurring. And so like that, like the TV market is still important, because part of the reason why the CFL and XFL are talking is that the XFL has a little bit more connection to American TV deals, and the CFL wants in on that. And and so like if the CFL can put its product in front of American TV eyeballs and not just Canadian TV eyeballs, then it can, you know, stop hemorrhaging the money that it's losing right now. So it's all kind of blurring together, and you know, the pie is growing, and I think what we're seeing is just people that are competing for the scraps deciding that maybe they shouldn't be fighting each other, and maybe they should be finding a way to work together. I mean, from what I could tell from FCF viewership on Twitch, that was we're talking in the thousands of views, not even at like Overwatch League levels where you could get into like the tens of thousands of concurrent viewers, but like enough to build enough to attract some sponsors here and there, and enough to build something if you start small, and don't make two promises that are too big. So there's a foundation there. And there's a demand for off-season football. So we'll have to see what happens. But I guess more information on this NFL TV deal. We've got all the current existing players are still in it. Now Disney gets a couple Super Bowls along the way, and a little bit more benefits for ESPN to have some flexible scheduling for Monday Night Football, so they can get some better games towards the end of the year. Everything else kind of stays the same, except Amazon gets Thursday Night Footballs exclusively. So, yeah, all of this together is $10 billion a year shared among all the teams, which the players get half of that. So, so that's $156 million for player salaries just from the TV deal alone. The current cap is at $180 million. So that's we're getting very close to the point where the NFL could sustain what it has now without attracting fans to stadiums. So it's like they're that kind of juggernaut when it comes to live TV money, and just from TV rights alone. And then that's not even counting like other sponsorship deals that they can get along the way. So those are the kind of numbers that we're talking about when it comes to the top of the top. Everything else kind of pales in comparison. All right. Let's move on to the NCAA tournament.
Hell yeah.
All right. We had, I guess we are starting the second round today, which is kind of weird because normally these games go from Thursday to Sunday, but this week we had Friday to Monday. But yeah, the as far as the men's tournament, we've got plenty of first round upsets, a couple 13 seeds beating 4 seeds. Congrats to our friend King Jay, who goes to the University of North Texas, I believe, and and they got a big upset over Purdue. A 15 seed beat a 2 seed. Oral Roberts beating Ohio State.
Yeah, that one was a bit of a surpriser. But it was, I mean, like we always say, right, these games are really, really close a lot of the time. They're never the runaways you kind of expect them to be. So they tend to be really close, come down to the last couple of shots kind of a thing.
Yeah, Abilene, number 14, Abilene Christian beat number 3, Texas. So we've got Oregon and Virginia Commonwealth, I believe, which was declared a no contest. Due to VCU having COVID issues, they weren't able to to give out any more information just because of privacy reasons. But we've got breaking news: Loyola Chicago just beat number 1 Illinois. So,
yep, which murders my bracket.
Everybody's brackets, because I think the top 2 teams in
and that's a
as far as picks were Gonzaga and Illinois. So
and we're talking about how a lot of these games tend to be close. That's 71-58.
that was a
71-58 game. That's an interesting one, man. That like the upsets this year are really surprising and like really interesting how they happen. I still have a chance as long as Kansas wins everything. But other than that, we've gotten some good games this year under the weirdness of COVID and all the other stuff that is happening. We actually have gotten some really good games.
So Loyola Chicago is one of those, I don't want to say meme teams because they've obviously earned their success, but I think
they came into it as number 8.
Yeah. They are famous for a couple of Cinderella runs in the past. And most recently for one fan in particular, Sister Jean, who is kind of a 101 year old nun that goes to their games. And so she gets a lot of, attention, and I think that's why I recognize the school name, because it's the Sister Jean school. Mm-hmm. So they got to still making waves, still causing problems for all these other teams, and now they're DJM calls them a sneaky elite team. So they this is them making their mark on this year's tournament. DGM says that they're kind of what Wichita State used to be. Feel like Creighton used to be one of those teams as well that you forget they exist even as a university, and then they show up in the tournament and just wreck shit. So
I mean, there's a lot of teams like that, right? Like this team, the other two teams you mentioned. I think Gonzaga was one of those teams for me, kind of personally.
Like 20 years ago, maybe, yeah. And now they're kind of this, now they're the number 1 overall seed. So,
yeah.
I guess college basketball, you kind of make a name for yourself, and then you can build a program and do a little bit better with recruiting, and you get one good recruiting class and keep them together for 4 years. And maybe can make something out of it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So going on from there, we have our bracket for the men's tournament. And the other day, JVZ threw up. I meant to join it this morning, but the bracket closed this morning. We have a bracket for the women's tournament as well.
Yeah. The next story kind of got me thinking about it. It just why didn't I go through the effort of making a women's pool at the same time as I made the men's pool? Mm-hmm. But as far as our men's pool goes, we've got DJM is at the top right now, he's tied for second. This last upset kind of threw a wrench into things, but we're all kind of in recovery, trying to figure out what's going on with her bracket now after this latest upset. But yeah, the men's pool is going strong. And then the women's pool, it's open. If you were able to fill out a bracket in time, you can. And same thing with the men's pool. If you have a bracket, you can still join our pool. You just have to click the links that we'll have in our show notes and add your existing ESPN bracket to the pool. I don't know if you can still create one now that games have started.
No, but, you can't.
Okay. I wasn't sure whether they let you like select the games that haven't been played yet, but
because when I like, there was literally one game had just started for the women's bracket when I remembered to try to go and do it, and it wouldn't let me create one. It would just let me look at everyone else's.
Okay, so the games start today for the women, and today being Sunday, and the big story throughout the week was it was a viral story about the disparities between the women's weight room and the men's weight room. They have two different bubbles. The women are in San Antonio. The men are in Indianapolis. So the women's weight room at the Henry B. Gonzalez Convention Center, where if you're a PAC South attendee, you recognize that place. The women's weight room there basically consisted of a table with a bunch of yoga mats on it and a dumbbell rack.
Like whatever you're thinking about as a dumbbell rack. No, a triangle stand dumbbell rack, like a 5 to 40 range, like five, no, not even 5 to 40, probably a 5 to 30 range.
Yeah.
So 5 pound, 10 pound, 20 pound, 30 pound, like that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. One of those triangle racks.
For everyone.
Yeah. Everyone. All 64 teams.
Let's paint this as bad as it fucking is. That triangle rack and a couple of yoga mats for everyone to use, right? Whereas they built a fucking gym, like a gym bigger than the gym that I currently go to work out, which is for everyone, for the men's basketball tournament, right? Which
several weight machines, a bunch of benches, all
squat racks, multi racks with that had benches and squat racks on them. Really good high class fucking gear. It was just dumb, right? Because they got caught up in, like, this is one of those situations. And I think this particular situation I will never let go of, even though at the point where other people are trying to praise them now. Fuck that. Because they tried to blame it on logistics and spacing, right? So here's the problem with both of those, right? The spacing was very automatically debunked because the girls just went, well, here's our practice court. Here's an empty space, right?
Yeah.
Not being used for anything.
Yeah. They zoomed out from the picture of the table and the weights and just like showed the rest of the room. And it is in the middle of one of those gigantic convention halls.
Yeah.
And so they had plenty of space.
Showed the contention of that versus the men's practice court. You look to the other side, they have this gigantic weight room that is being built for them, right? So spacing issue, that's a lie, right? Logistics, there was a quiet try to be like, oh, we were working on it and we just did this one first because the men's tournament started first. No, that's also bullshit, because you could have taken half of what you put there and put it for the women and set them up at the same time, right? Yeah. Because both groups had to be in their bubbles already, right? Like, so there's no reason to say that both of those, like, you're setting the whole thing up at the same time, so why can't you set that up? That's also bullshit.
Yeah, it's like, as far as like remembering what to do for the women, like all they literally had to do was, what is the list of things that we got for the men? okay, let's get the same thing for the women. And they didn't even bother to do that.
Buy a shit ton of equipment.
Like, right? And that's the thing. It's like they did something. So somebody clearly decided that this was acceptable and didn't even think about about comparing it to what the men had, and or they did think about that and just thought that the women didn't deserve it, which is so, even worse. So
there's another thing I want to point out, right? And it's something that exists in a realm that I've been taking a part in, and that's in just weightlifting and fitness in general, right? And it comes from two sides, right? A lot of it comes from men, and there is a portion of it that also comes from other women. And there's this weird toxic bullshit about women not lifting weights, right? Or not lifting weights the same way men lift weights. There's just this bullshit thread that exists in fitness culture, weightlifting culture, that comes from a very disgusting set of people that are men and women, a majority of them men, about women not lifting weights because, like, just whatever the fuck you want to think is where their brains go with it, right? And I feel like some of this is that. I feel like a small portion of this is that, right? That there's somebody there who's like, oh, you know, they mostly do cardio and some resistance training, so they don't need weights, right? They don't need squat racks, they don't need benches, they don't need that stuff.
Yeah, they need yoga mats, and that's why they gave them the stack of yoga mats, and right.
Because all they're going to do is women cardio.
Exercise. This is how men exercise.
And... Right. And they're like, oh, well, you know, that would be a waste to give them that because most of them aren't going to use that, right? So why spend the money on that when it's not going to be used? And it's that, like, it is literally the thing that bothers the fuck out of me that people even remotely think that or do that. Because it's fucking dumb, man. It's so dumb.
Yeah, And when it comes to the money thing, it's like,
oh yeah, no.
Like, we had a bunch of companies step up and say, like, we will supply the equipment for this. Like, they were willing to, you know, sponsor this and supply the equipment for the women's weight room when they found out that this happened. And so, like, it doesn't, you know. And on top of that, like, the NCAA is supposed to be treating these two, treating men and women equally. And so this isn't like a revenue argument that you might get when it comes to like professional sports. This is a matter of, like, this is a Title IX matter at this point. So like the fact that this happened, and then the fact that they tried to lie about it, which makes it even worse, or they tried to lie about the causes, and, you know, yeah, now they've fixed it. But yeah, this really is, like, I mean, it speaks to a large.
This is a new low for them. I don't know. See, I don't know if this is a new low for them. I think it is just what it should be, and it's more people calling them out on it, right? Because I feel like this is shit that has. I feel like the reason they think that this is okay to do is because they've gotten away with doing it before, right? So I don't think this is necessarily a new low. I think this is the consistent low. I think we're just hearing more about it because more people are willing to call them out on it without the consequence of repercussion.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to kind of the way we talk about women's sports. Let me rephrase it. It's kind of in the way we don't talk about women's sports, you know, and like subtle things, like, admittedly, like I thought to create a men's tournament bracket. I didn't think of creating a women's tournament bracket, even though it would have taken the same amount of effort. And so it's, you know, I could argue like, oh, sure, like the men's tournament is a little bit more popular. Or maybe I could make the argument that, like, oh, I I don't know a whole lot about the about NCAA women's basketball. So, but then again, I don't know a whole lot about NCAA men's basketball either. And that didn't stop me from, you know, that doesn't stop me from entering a bracket pool every year. So, so why can't we go through that same effort for the women? And this was a matter of effort, and it was. And it's not like the women got a like slightly substandard thing. It's not like they got, it's not like they're complaining that their food looks slightly less healthy or something, or looks slightly less fresh. They got something that was so far off from what the men got that you have to wonder what the hell anybody was thinking, or whether they were even thinking at all. And I think so often we talk about women's sports like they should be just super grateful that it even exists, and they should be willing to take whatever scraps they get, and that is like that's just super demeaning, and like we and it like we do it in subtle ways too sometimes, like where we say, you know, the NBA comes back and we say basketball is back. And we just think of the NBA as like, this is basketball. Whereas the WNBA bubble had started 2 weeks earlier and we don't say basketball is back for them.
Nice.
So yeah, it's just subtle shit like that. And then subtle ways where we just seem to talk like we expect the women to accept that they are not just lesser, but so far lesser that they should be glad to have anything at all. That they should be grateful to have rack and yoga mats.
Can I be the bad guy just for a second?
Sure.
I just want to ask you the question, just to put it out there. Because we all know what this comes down to. We all know that the NCAA men's basketball tournament generates, I believe, like possibly $1 billion of revenue every year for the NCAA. It generates ratings for the TV networks. And we all know that this is what it comes down to. How do we fix the issue that is a part of women's sports and women's athletics that they do not generate revenue? How do we fix that problem?
I think. Go ahead.
Part of what we're seeing with recent revenue increases in, or at least recent viewership increases, and I assume revenue follows, for the WNBA, for the NWSL, and I mean, honestly, I feel like women's tennis is just kind of a big example for historical reasons, but it's like the more you show women's sports, on at least a somewhat equal footing, the more people watch in general.
Like tennis is a really good I'm so glad you brought that up, right? Because I was just gonna yell. Tennis is actually a really good version of that, right? Because the thing with tennis is a lot of the time when you're watching tennis, it's happening at the same exact time, right? Yeah. So you'll watch a men's match and then they'll turn around and they're like, well, that match wrapped up. Let's go to the next one. We got the women's match going on right now. So that's what we're going to go to. And it gets talked about with the same language, with the same rhetoric in the same exact way. Right. Yeah. And I think that is number one. Right. Stop talking about it like it's something separate. Right. Stop treating it like it's something other than women playing X. Right. It's you watch a tennis match and it's like, all right, well, the gentlemen are doing that. All right. And they wrapped it up. And now we're going to have Serena Williams. The race is, you know, whoever. And then from there, it's the same rhetoric, except for the fact that it's women. Like, that's it. That's the only thing that changes. That is the only disparity. Right. When tennis is talked about and watched and viewed, but when you come to other sports, right, especially namely basketball, it starts getting in comparison to, right? Like, oh yeah, we had the men's tournament today. Man, great shots, a lot of athleticism. You know, let's see what the women can do. Like, no, just talk about what's happening in front of you. Stop making it an in comparison to the other thing. Like, because outside of the gender of the people who are playing the sports, nothing else is different, right? Like,
I mean, there are, but like, and we can still talk about those things and the same.
How do you sell the guys? Yeah. I'm asking, how do you sell the game? How do you sell it? How do you sell it? As equal?
I think you take the in comparison out. Secondly, you integrate it into the viewing perspective. The same way, like, JVZ made the comparison to tennis. Wrap up a men's game, show a women's game. Wrap up that, go back to whatever the next goddamn game that is being played is. Just do it that way. Like,
I think
you have the logistics to do it. Just do it.
Like, you need to have, like, roughly the same availability. You don't necessarily need to put them, you know, it's
no,
like...
No. I'm saying in, like, kind of the perfect landscape, right? Right.
Like for tennis, people know, like, okay, the women's final is on Saturday for, like, the big Grand Slams. Like, the women's final is on Saturday night. The men's final is on Sunday night. So, like, the men are still getting, like, the most important, like, the tournaments end with the men's final, I think, unless they do, like, some of the smaller stuff later. But those are, like, the main events. That's the one that happens last, and it just consistently does. It's not like you don't necessarily have to put them on equal footing, although I think it would be nice if that was eventually the end goal. Mm-hmm. But it's not, people talk about these things like you have to put exactly the same amount of money towards the women that you do towards the men, even though the women bring in so much less. But it's not that, like, you can do it the way, like, just put more effort than you're doing now into the women. And when it comes to how much more, it's like, I feel like there's reasonable amounts. Like I said earlier, when it comes to this weight room thing, it's like, all you had to do was look at the list that you gave for the men and do the same, like, order the same shit for the women, and, you know, problem solved.
Something else, and this is going to be my particularly last thing on it, but something else tennis has as a presentation, usually more so now used as, like, charity, but in other times has been used as, like, a really fun event to look at, is mixed doubles, right?
Yeah.
Mixed doubles in tennis has had some of the best games I have ever seen, right? And at the outright, it is still one of those things where people are just like, and that's just tennis, right? But you take your biggest stars and you just do a mixed doubles tournament. You take one guy, one girl, one guy, one girl, and you have them play tennis.
The NBA is actually trying to do a lot of that. Maybe not in terms of, like, them playing together, but
do a fun pickup all-star game.
Well, right? Yeah, they do that during all-star weekend. Like, they have WNBA stars participate in that.
Yeah, do it in college.
A little bit.
Do it there too.
Yeah.
Do that. That gets rid of more of that disparity too, right?
Yeah. And it like, part of the issue is that we other the women. And I know that term has come a lot in social justice talk, but, like, the we treat it like it's this other thing. And so so I guess to answer DJM's question, like, how do you bring in that extra viewership, and how do you bring in that extra money? And a big part of that is just not treating it like it's this
right.
other
that,
thing.
That is number one, man. And, like, that is the number one thing. Stop treating it like it is a secondary carnival fucking event.
Because actually, like, the UFC is another example of how, like, you know, women's MMA is just a thing that we understand is a part of MMA now. Mm-hmm. And for so many years, the UFC was resistant to the idea, just completely resistant. And, you know, and it took Ronda Rousey becoming a megastar to it kind of helped put the UFC women's division on the map. But
you said that, one of those last cards, the best fight of the night was the Amanda Nunes fight.
Yeah.
Like, hold on. DJM says, does the WNBA need a megastar, right? I think the thing is, they have had them. They just have not presented them to the public. You only know about them if you are really deep in the basketball circles, right? Like, there are names that ring out if you know WNBA basketball. They have not been given the amount of shine that others have, right? Names like Candace Parker are household names because of other NBA stars putting her name also out there, right?
And so they are doing a better job of that now, and featuring them on NBA television, whether as commentators or whatever, they're doing a much better job of that than they used to, so that we do know these names, and so that if somebody does decide to tune into a WNBA game because they see it on ESPN2 or something, then which they are also trying to do a lot more of, that we actually recognize those names and recognize those players and can actually build on that knowledge.
I think the bigger thing is when those names do come up in sports like the WNBA or things like women's hockey or college basketball, right? It gets cherry picked, right? You're like, oh, we could take this person and like put them on a pedestal, right? Women's fighting still kind of does this. We take this person and put them on a pedestal, right? And you don't really learn about these other people unless they're going up against that person, right? Because it's still the other mentality. I think that is the biggest thing that needs to be attacked, is the other mentality, right? Because the cherry picking happens and you know that one person, but then you don't know any of the other intangibles. You don't know who their biggest competitors were. You don't know who gives them a challenge. You don't know the teams that they struggle against. You don't know the teams that they've been on. You know their name. You know what they may have done for their sport necessarily, their records, the records they've broken. But because of the cherry pick mentality, you end up in this realm where I know Candace Parker's name, right? But I can't necessarily pull out a stat line the same way I could for like maybe Carmelo. Like, you know, I can't be like, oh, he was on this team for this couple of years, he's on, you know what I mean? Like, because of the cherry picking that happens, right?
I focus on the WNBA just because of, you know, my attachment to the league, but it's almost like broadcasting for it or the way SportsCenter treats it or the way, you know, wider media treats it. It's almost the same way that we look at like the one day where the Ocho gets broadcasted on ESPN and we see like all these novelty sports show up. And it's probably disrespectful for me to call them novelty sports. But the WNBA is not a novelty sport. It's just the women's version of the men's sport. And let me rephrase that. It's just women playing basketball versus men playing basketball. We've seen that example over and over again. Like, even, you know, like with fighting, with tennis, with the WWE, like now that they've managed to sprinkle in women's matches, it's like they become part of the conversation. And now that it's normalized that they're a part of the conversation, then, there's still a long ways to go. There's still inequalities, but the money is coming in. And so, like, you know, show them more often. And when you show them, don't treat them like they're an other thing, and don't treat them like they're a thing that everybody just has to accept for the sake of equality. Like, you can choose to watch women's sports or not to for whatever reason. Just like you can make the same choice when it comes to men's sports, but you know, it's a thing that exists. And so you cover it like it's a thing that deserves to exist. And, you know, because it does deserve to exist. So, DJM, that was a long-winded answer to your question, but I think,
You know,
I think we sort of covered it, and I got out the rant that I wanted to say about not.
I think it's something weirdly that is a weird connection for us, because it's something that we're passionate about, but we also fall into the traps of it. You know what I mean? Like,
well, and also, like, we see the same things when it comes to, because we cover a lot of smaller sports on here too, and mm-hmm. so we see the same things like when we talk about esports and the way that that those topics get othered as well,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, treated like they're just kind of the weird biggest novelty things.
One of the biggest like things attacking esports with the whole men's and women's thing is people keep going, why, when it starts to come to the forefront of things, we separate it, right? Everybody plays in the same online ladders and, like, you know, plays against each other. So why is it when some girls come up and they are at the height of being professional, we separate them out, and then it's, oh, let's make a women's Counter-Strike League. You know, like, it's these trappings that are still happening there in esports that is attacking these things, right? And some people have done integration not well, mostly out of the name of monetary value. Whoa.
Yes.
But yeah.
I'm gonna challenge you on this one too. Because okay. You brought up a point about
I am too
integrating. And you mentioned women's only esports.
Yeah.
And I think that goes back to the fact that we all know that the internet and competitive gaming and esports is rife with all sorts of toxic masculinity at all levels. And that safe space for women, a lot of times in esports, is necessary.
And yeah, I think that's why those women-specific leagues exist when it comes to... Because motorsports is the same thing. Like, when Formula W was announced, that was somewhat controversial, even among women drivers, because they felt like it was something that essentially separated them from the men and made it seem like, okay, this is the only track you can go down now is the one that's meant for women. But at the same time, some of these women were not getting opportunities to showcase their skills in the same circles that the men were. And so this is a place that gives them a chance to do that in a more safer environment. Not necessarily safer, because they're still going to get trolls or whatever, but like it gives them a little bit more opportunity to show off what they have. And then, you know, that helps them get their name out there. And then that gives them opportunities to get pulled back into the main game that should not necessarily distinguish between men or women.
So my big problem with that and that mindset is, like, I use Counter-Strike as one point, but I always fall back on StarCraft, right? StarCraft is a individual esport, right? It's one person versus another person. They hardly ever separated, like, women versus women or men versus men necessarily, right? It was just whoever was the best, right? And as that community went and grew, when that toxicity came up, the community was a lot better. And I say the community, and by community I mean the people involved who were the people who set up tournaments and made those organizations and did all those things, were better at discouraging and countering that toxicity, right? And I hate this notion that people go, the internet or the trolls, like they're not these mystical entities. Like, they're not mystical entities. They are other people.
And I mean, and the women aren't necessarily fragile either. Like, they don't necessarily need to be protected. But I think it's just people looking to find places to give opportunity. So I think that's why we have that separation. That's why those things were necessarily created, not to separate them, but to provide that opportunity.
Yeah.
So I feel like I feel like that's less of a sexist thing.
But at the same time, and this is just my mindset, right? I feel like in a little bit, that in itself is a little bit is born of toxicity. And then that in itself is creating a bubble so that you don't have to deal with it, right? Rather than just dealing with it and to use a fucking dumb term, manning the fuck up and actually dealing with the problems that come forth and then lessening them, you go, well, this is a problem. We can't do anything about it. Whatever. But go Cass, play over there.
Cass, the thing is that that shit never stops. And we all know
I've seen it lessen, and I've seen when people are more willing to fight for those things and actually do the right things, it does lessen. It's never going to fucking stop. But rather than treating everyone else like a child and trying to find the best way for them to share, you fucking jettison people out of the goddamn rocket ship. Like, that's it.
Well, I like that idea.
And then at the end, yes, maybe there's
You know me. I'm like, quick with the ban hammer. You know that.
Right. But this is my thing, right? At the end of it, maybe there are still one or two that you have to deal with. But guess what the majority now is?
Yeah, like, I see what you guys mean. I just think that's like a slightly different
issue
than...
like, just in my own headspace, I'm tired of the word safe space. Because to me, it just means you don't want to deal with the actual problem that exists.
Yeah, and I think your point that it does create kind of a safety net to not confront the issue later, to say, well, you guys have your own league, so what are you guys... what are you mad about now? Like, I think that it creates too much of an opportunity for that. But at the same time, I think you also have to trust people to not deal with that as well. Like, I think, you know, in 30 years, hopefully W Series doesn't exist. And, and there's just as many women drivers as there are men drivers.
Funnily enough, somebody sent me a snippet of an article that explored not in the professional sense, but the online realm of gaming, right? And took a like weird cross section of like Xbox gamers and looked at the way toxic males approach females, right? And it seemed as though from this research that like when people were more skilled, they were more willing to be on an equal setting with females, as opposed to males who are less skilled and outlashed against the females that were in their game.
Yeah, and I think that's also been a topic of discussion for like the NBA and the WNBA. Like, NBA stars respect the hell out of WNBA stars, and they're just now getting to the point where they're trying to be super vocal about it. We see a lot of NBA players, you know, sporting WNBA hoodies now, which I have one of those.
I think it's a learning and growth thing, right? You got to be taught to view people as equal. And a lot of times people aren't, you know what I mean? And then it comes up later in their life that you're told these people are supposed to be equal to you. And that is literally the last chance you have to ever do that, right? It's a growing thing. You have to teach people from a younger age to respect other humans.
And that's the normalization part of it too. And why I keep coming back to that. And, you know, don't treat women's sports like it's this other thing. Treat it like it's something that exists and deserves to exist. And we've seen, you know, the WNBA is about to start its 25th season. And so that means, and I've said this over and over, like, we're just now getting to the point where the players, the college players coming into the league, are people that grew up knowing that professional basketball in America for women was a legitimate career path. We're getting to the point where we're seeing more women come out of college early because they can actually make a living playing basketball rather than staying in college, getting a degree, and doing something else with their lives.
Yeah.
And where they could, you know, have that career in America and not have to play overseas every off season. This is a legitimate career path. And so now that there are more people more women understanding that it's a legitimate career path, they're staying within the sport, they're sticking with the sport, and we are getting so much better influx of talent right now. And when we get that influx of talent, then we get, you know, better highlights, better everything, better performance, better drama, better all of that feeds into itself because we choose to stop treating this thing like it's an other, and yeah, we start treating it like something that deserves to exist. So it all feeds into itself.
So speaking of getting treated like another, let's talk a little bit about esports.
Yeah.
So this I'm not sure. We are going to need DJM's expertise on this, but Sony, yeah, that company. Yep, they also make Sony. That thing. buys EVO, the big, yes, fighting tournament, the biggest fighting tournament that there is, right?
Yeah, Sony announced a couple of days ago that they bought the rights to the Evolution Fighting Game Championship Series, EVO. It is the biggest fighting game series in the world. It is the world championships of fighting games. In the last year or so, even before the pandemic, EVO had run into some issues where one of their founders and owners had gotten into some legal trouble. Not going to get into that too much here. And because of the pandemic, EVO Online became a thing, and that did not go as well as it should have. And with everything that has happened, Sony had made the decision to come in and buy the rights to the series. Now, as it stands right now, EVO 2021 is set to be online in August, which is traditionally the time of year it is held, formerly in Las Vegas. And Sony has said that it will go on, and all of the EVO staffers have said that it will continue to be open platform and that all games will be welcome. Yeah. And that's come from Sony.
Most specifically, non-PlayStation games, even though, right, Sony now owns this series.
Yes, and in fact, some of the games will be played on PC. Like, so far, a lot of the games are games that you can get on a Sony console. However, Sony and the EVO staff that is still there has said that Tekken, for example, will be played with crossplay on PC, and all platforms will be welcome. And there is the elephant in the room, that is Nintendo and Smash Brothers. Mm. Sony has, well, at least EVO has said that they will be welcoming Smash and Nintendo to EVO anytime. The door is open. That's coming from EVO. Honestly, I believe them. But
yeah,
Nintendo... Nintendo does have a kind of a weird history when it comes to, one, Smash, and two, the competitive tournament scene. It is kind of a weird history. And Nintendo did release a statement where they were kind of non-committal about Smash being at EVO. So it's really kind of in a weird space right now with this, but it's really on Nintendo's side, because when EVO and Sony say, hey, this is EVO, it's EVO, it's gonna be EVO, it's still EVO, it's always gonna be EVO, all games are gonna be played there, this is EVO, I 100% believe them. I really do think that right now it's in Nintendo's hands.
I'm going to use this as a weird comparison to our other esports story, where I feel like Sony is one of those companies that looks at a buying proposition and doesn't go, how do we infuse more of ourselves into this, right? They go, how do we maximize what this is and then gain a profit from it, right? So the difference being, Sony goes, cool, we're going to buy this. We're going to infuse it with money. Cool. All right, you are the people who have been running this for years. What can we do as a wallet to help you further this brand, right? Whereas a lot of other companies, like Blizzard and Activision, look at a buying proposition and they go, okay, how does this become more of a thing for us? How do we maximize the profit for us? How does it already work? Cool. No, that's dumb. What we want to do is make more money. Does that make us more money? Not right away. Then that's not what we care about. Like, and I think that's that inherent difference, right? That doesn't necessarily speak to the problem with Nintendo and Sony. That goes back years and years and years and years. But I think that is what you should do when you kind of value buy something, right? You're buying something for the value that you don't know. You ask the people who are already there how to maximize the value of it.
And so, what I'm saying is, I think Sony definitely understands the value of Evo. It is the fighting game tournament that even people who are not into fighting games know about.
Yeah.
And clearly going to be pumping income into this to make it even bigger than what it already is. Sony is clearly willing to say, hey, this is Evo. We're here to make this even bigger because we already know it has an established name. It will generate money for us regardless.
Right.
So I'm a little out of the loop here. What is it about Sony that makes you guys trust them? Because
decision they've made when it comes to their cameras, when it comes to the way they treat the PlayStation, when it just comes to a lot of things, they've shown an ability to leave things as it is, sometimes to its own detriment, and that kind of being the Sonic series. Like, they sometimes don't put their hands in things enough.
That's like an episode of Two Nerdy Black Guys, Kaz. Well, we may do that for the patrons.
Yeah. Well,
but
because I'm thinking, like, when I saw the story come out, like, I started asking the question, like, what are they gonna get out of it? Because obviously they want to build something on it, and you know, is it gonna be like the broadcast is, you know, like they show a match, and then after the match, like, here's an ad for a PlayStation exclusive game, and then
you'll show another patch like that. The Sony games will have the bigger stage necessarily, right? They'll have the bigger area for people to view the games, but it won't be in a sense that takes away from any of the other brands, right? Most likely.
And here's my point, Jay VZ. Sony initially released a joint statement with the staff of Evo. It was not Sony executives. It was not the Evo staff. It was a joint statement between them saying that they are going to make sure that Evo maintains what it is. And a lot of things that Sony has done in like the last 5 or 6 years, as far as independent developers and the platform itself, they've earned some goodwill. And I feel like there's no reason for them not to overtake this. And just to go back to a second for Nintendo and Smash Brothers, like I said, it's a weird dynamic. And Kaz, you can jump in on this one too, please. Smash Brothers is a super popular competitive game. Yes, it's at the kind of esports professional level. The thing is that Nintendo doesn't quite jive with that a lot of times. They've always maintained that Smash is a quote-unquote party game. It's a, quote, casual game, unquote. But they don't necessarily love the competitive scene, and they've had issues with competitive tournaments before with Smash. So I think they've kind of had a begrudging relationship with Evo just because of how big it is. And I think this really is kind of what's happened with Nintendo right now is not surprising in the fighting game world.
See, like I could see Nintendo deciding to pull Smash from Evo because they don't like the fact that the stage that the Smash matches are going to be played on has too much PlayStation branding on it. Like, stuff like that is kind of what's going through my mind.
So part of the problem in general is part of what DJM said, like, Nintendo sticks to their branding. Anything that falls outside of their branding, they shun, right? So Smash has kind of been accepted by this community that Nintendo doesn't necessarily, right? They kind of give them lip service sometimes because it's the biggest buying community of that game. But at the forefront of it, they want to stick to Nintendo is the family brand, right? That is the mantra that they speak daily. Nintendo is the family brand. Anything that falls outside of that, they at best give lip service to. They don't want to deal with it. And it, like, that doesn't even necessarily have to deal with the problems that they have with Sony that have just lived on in for centuries. That is just Nintendo and it's like inherence, right? They try to stick to their lane of we are the family brand.
Yeah. So I guess we'll have to wait and see on that. I think what they're essentially positioning themselves for is just for a negotiation. Mm-hmm. That, like, if you're going to show our game, then we want you to show it this way, and we want to put this
bright
on the
colors, like nobody cursing, nobody like wearing these kind of like that's how Nintendo is with their stuff.
And if
the
they
thing
really
is,
want to play hardball,
and the
they
thing
could
is,
be like,
I guarantee you, Evo will 100% be on board. Evo would do it.
Well, it also depends on how good faith each side approaches the negotiations. Like, maybe Nintendo says we want our game to be the feature event, and, you know, we want this to go on last and all that. And so, like,
you know, if Nintendo would say some shit just so that he can then be like, oh, see, it wasn't us.
Right. Yeah. And that's what worries me about this kind of thing. And, so it's just like a bunch of
and you're right.
politics injected.
You're right.
Injected
like
into
the
this.
The general consensus is that this is not going to be Sony. It's not going to be on Sony.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the goddamn elephant in the room. Blizzard, Activision, fucking Overwatch, garbage pail kids decided to fire a bunch of people again because that's how they keep their profit margin so goddamn high in the sky, to the point where they are going to probably kill two of their only still existing esports because they've killed all the other ones. Shout out to HOTS and StarCraft. They've fired 190 people, which have includes 50 people from their esports divisions, producers, deal setters, team organizers, things like that. Because as we talked about, they franchised their stuff, except for like Call of Duty. I think Call of Duty isn't necessarily franchised the way Overwatch League is.
I'm glad DJM brought this up because I completely forgot that all those people got laid off. Or that got laid off basically got like $200 gift cards to.
They got a small settling fee or whatever they're.
If I remember right, it was a severance package of like 90 days. It was a severance package. They will keep their health benefits for a year.
Yes.
And then they will get the $200 gift card to Battle.net.
Yeah, not just a $200 like Visa gift card. Yeah. No, a gift card to buy shit from the dude who fired you.
Yes.
Like, on one hand, it's like, okay, you're giving me a severance package. All right, cool. You're letting me keep my health benefits for a year? Oh, okay. All right, cool. The gift card.
Yeah. So
part of that severance is depending on the state that some of these workers we're working in might have been mandatory. So
yeah. All right, so DJM, start the timer. So here is the thing, right? This is why I walked away from wanting to care about the Overwatch League and things like that, right? They only care about profitability, right? That's all they care about. That's all they're going to care about. That's all they want to care about is profitability. The thing with the thing in which that has caused them to the point to care enough to take or not care enough to take more money from something like Call of Duty, which people are like, why would you take money from Call of Duty? It's the biggest game in the world. It's not the biggest esport in the world, right? It is the biggest streaming and probably one of the biggest played games in the world. So they don't have to keep this thing for them that is mostly a promotional tool to get people to buy the game because they have other realms in which they can do that, right? They want to keep this really high skilled level player base happy because then those players, if they fall off of the Call of Duty League, guess where they go? They go to streaming. They're still going to stream Call of Duty because it's the thing that they're known for. And that all just funnels back into the profitability of Activision Blizzard. Like, that's all they really care about at the end of the day. I could see in the next 3 to 4 years of them dismantling the Overwatch League because if the profitability keeps losing and people are not buying this game, if Overwatch 2 does not have some kind of record-breaking sales, I could see them starting to do what they did to HOTS and do what they've done to StarCraft and start putting this game in the back burner for something newer that they can put in front of the public and try to garner that attention with. That's all they care about is the attention that they can garner with these products so that they can get profit.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the crux of this, right? Like the eSport was an advertisement for the game, which I guess is not a whole lot different than other eSports. But
no, but at the same time, right, when you talk about these things and you talk about the factor of franchising and you talk about what you can do with it, right, Riot looks at their esport as a way not only for them to make more money, but for those brands and companies to make money, right? Because then at the end of the day, those brands and those companies go out and they talk about League of Legends, and that brings more people back to League of Legends, right? If you find a way for everyone else to earn off of the thing that you're doing, it comes back to you if you do it correctly, right? Going into Valorant leagues, like initially Riot was going to franchise them, but they decided that's not the way you do it. They looked at the Call of Duty structure. They looked at the Counter-Strike structure and they went, franchising doesn't work there. So we're not going to do it. We're going to let the tournament organizers who have been doing Counter-Strike for years do Valorant that same way. Are they going to have more hand in it than Valve does with Counter-Strike? Yes, because that's how Riot works. But they understand how to look at a business deal and craft it correctly. Right, I still don't like Riot as a company, but goddamn if they don't know how to do things better than goddamn Activision Blizzard does.
Well, and I think franchising for Riot was a tool to fix a very specific problem, and it was the fact that they couldn't get long-term sponsorship deals because teams were getting relegated.
Yeah,
so that it was a very specific thing they chose to do for a very specific reason, and I feel like for other leagues that have started with the franchising model, they started with it because that's how the NFL does things and that's how the NBA does things, and our sport will eventually be as big as the NFL or the NBA, and so like that's kind of completely the wrong reason and completely the opposite of starting small and building up and building organically. So I'm running down your timer, but that is kind of the same argument we always make when it comes to some of the bigger esports and why we are so bearish on Overwatch League. And so it's, you know, they've got $700 million of commitments when it comes to like franchising fees for Call of Duty and Overwatch, and they promised like all these massive profits and stuff, and all the people that were like in the executive ranks when they made those promises aren't even there anymore because they left for, you know, to go work for Riot or for Epic Games or all these other places, and so, you know, the people that are still there that have to piece this all back together are just inheriting this problem.
Mm-hmm. And that's what it is, right? It's going to be this thing where it becomes this constant revolving door, right? Like, hey, can you make us $100 million? I don't know. I can sure try. You didn't get the job done. Hey, the guy behind you, can you make us $100 million? I can sure try. Well, that guy fucked up. So now it's your turn up to bat. Like, rather than really laying out a plan, designing a legitimate business goddamn plan, rather than keep asking the next guy, can you earn us $100 million? Like, people can see the non-genuineness that exists. Like, they can see it. They can see the fucking the greed that exists. Like, and the more people see it, the more people speak out of it, the more people understand it's evil. The problem that happens is they're going to try to do something to garner some save of face and do all that before Overwatch 2 comes out, right? That's what they're going to do. That's how they fucking work. But I really want people to stay on this narrative that they don't care about this. Like these are the things that if we don't do it now, if we don't get these kind of entities out of esports, we're going to end up in a really bad place 10 years down the line.
Yeah. So what I'm worried about is that this is dangerously close to a punchline, and this punchline might get cited the next esport that comes around and tries to grow. Might get hurt by the reputation caused by Activision Blizzard in the way that they've treated these two esports and the others that they've killed along the way as well. Yeah. So
one thing, guys, real quick before we move on, Riot Games actually in 2016 hired Seth Killian, who was one of the co-founders of Evo and one of the original community managers of Capcom in the fighting game scene. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, because there's a non-secret fighting game that they're apparently working on.
So okay, so moving on.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's just that is just the inherent thing for me, right? We talk about how esports and competitive gaming is still this fledgling thing, right? Yeah, it's existed for 20, 30 plus years with, you know, like kind of the starts of like fighting games and Counter-Strike and StarCraft and things like that. But it is growing rapidly, and it's these pitfalls that we have to watch out for, right? We have to watch out for letting the fucking Robert Crafts and the Dan Snyders of this generation into these things that will then just make it as inherently evil as the NBA or the NFL have been. And then we have another 10 years before we get any actual like legitimacy in it. And I think we also need to start creating separation and stop just blanket terming all things as esports.
All right. Well, we'll come up with something. Maybe we'll put out a poll later. But this week's poll for the show is, will you attend a sporting event in 2021? And I think that's related.
I really want some speaking of competitive gaming and esports, I want to see some live Valorant. I want to see some live Call of Counter-Strike again. Like, I want to go to a fighting game tournament. Like, yeah. I'm hoping those things start to come back little by little, because those are the things I really want to do.
Yeah, I'm thinking by the end of the year, we should hopefully have. Yeah, I should hopefully be able to go to an NBA game, and so I'm hopeful. So I answered yes on the poll at Sports Odds Ends on Twitter. If you also want to vote in the poll, and last week we asked what people would not miss from the COVID era of sports, and half of you said you won't miss teams using COVID as an excuse to be cheap. The other half of you said you won't miss athletes and teams being super reckless. Thank you all for voting in that and hitting us up on Twitter throughout the week to talk sports. twitch.tv/sportsoddsandends. If you want to listen to this show live, we record Sundays at 2 p.m. Eastern. sportsoddsandends.com if you want to check out our show notes and plus get links to all the stuff that we talked about during the show, including links to our two tournament pools and especially links to the Discord, where we do a lot of sports talk throughout the week and share stories and share highlights. So please join the Discord and check that out. Patreon.com/sportsoddsandends if you want to support the show financially. Thank you to all of you who currently do that. And thank you to all of you who are listening every week. We love you guys. We'll see you next time.